Hey folks, Weingart here, and this is not a podcast. This is a we. I will put out a podcast later this week on the state of MCRIT and all the thoughts I've had for 2017. I'm still working on that. This is a quick we, and this is a we about steroids and septic shock. Why? Because we are getting a incredibly important study released towards the end of this month at the conference hosted by the person you're about to hear from. Let's go right into it. So then why don't you tell the listeners who you are?
Hi, I'm Rob McSweeney. I'm an intensivist in Belfast, and in my spare time, I run Critical Care Reviews, which includes a website, newsletter, annual book, occasional podcast, and of relevance this time around, a meeting, which is on in 2 weeks' time.
Indeed. And now what we're going to discuss today is steroids for septic shock. Why are we discussing that? What is this apropos of?
So as part of the meeting in a fortnight, we are incredibly fortunate to host the ANZIC CTG and George Institute for Global Health adrenal trial. And we will have the first results of this landmark trial, which is simply incredible. It's a 3,800 patient study. It's the largest study into septic shock ever. And it's hopefully going to advance our understanding of the use of steroids in septic shock. It's a fantastic trial. This has been an issue which has been plaguing intensivists for decades. Do we or do we not use steroids? And of course, they're used across a range of conditions, but specifically for adrenal, they're looking at septic shock. So we're hugely excited to have Balaventakash and a number of the other adrenal investigators, Simon Finfer, Anders Perner, Andy Rhodes, and there's one or two others as well who are coming to Belfast for this.
That is amazing. I know people hear that and they say, oh, I want to come now. Are there even tickets available or is that gone?
No, there are still a few tickets. People can still come. And it would be great to have them. It's in Titanic in Belfast, which is a beautiful venue. It's actually the site where Titanic itself was built and launched into the sea before it got sunk, somewhere close to you, actually. But so there are still tickets. If you can't make it to Belfast, don't worry. We will be live streaming. So the live stream will be there for free. We've got an entire session dedicated to adrenals.
Okay, folks, two things about that. If you want the URL for that, go to mcrit.org/adrenal, A-D-R-E-N-A-L, because right now Rob does not have the link yet, but I will link that to the live feed. So mcrit.org/adrenal will take you to the link that Rob has for the live feed. But it will also, after the live feed is over, that same day, Rob is going to edit and put up the entire session, and that will also take you there. I'll switch over from the live feed once the live feed is over to wherever it sits. And so you should watch this. It's foam. It is the announcement of a major trial at a foam meeting. This is huge. And he's not just giving them like 10 minutes like they would at some of the other conferences in critical care. They're going to announce the results. There's going to be a dedicated lecture as an editorial by some amazing critical care folks, and then a panel session. So you're going to hear everything you want to know about this study. What we figured we'd do in anticipation of that, Rob, is talk about our current approach, the pre-adrenal approach to steroids and septic shock. And this has gone back and forth in the literature, and no one has, I think, a clear answer. Hopefully we'll get one at your conference. But for now, when do you pull the trigger on giving steroids in septic shock?
That's a great question. And I'm probably relatively mainstream in that I will use steroids when someone is in septic shock and they're struggling a little bit, haven't been fluid resuscitated, and they're on a reasonable amount of your pressor of choice, typically noradrenaline or norepinephrine. I'll usually start it at around 0.2 to 0.3 mics per kilogram per minute.
And for you useless troglodytes, and I am one of them who is still dosing norepinephrine in micrograms per minute, that would be the equivalent of something like 14 to 21 micrograms per minute in an average-sized adult.
So it's pretty mainstream. I don't think there's anything overly unusual in that. What about you?
Well, let's give some background on this, and we'll see how that played into your decision you just made, because I think I'm pretty close to where you are. But we had the original Anand trial, which showed that in patients who, by their definition, had relative adrenal insufficiency, meaning even if their cortisol level was normal, it wasn't normal for the degree of stress they were in. In those particular patients, giving hydrocortisone had mortality benefit. And then we had the Corticus trial came out and showed the opposite, no real benefit. Now, there was a difference, in my opinion, between the two groups. The Anand study patients were super sick. A lot of them had the resistant shock to vasopressors we're talking about now. While the Corticus trial patients, in my opinion, while they were in critical care, were at a stable portion of their critical care stay. Most of them had either been weaned off pressors or at a stable dose and maintaining a good blood pressure. Is that accurate? You're the evidence-based medicine man in critical care. What do you think? Is that a
good summary? I think that's a very good summary. There are a couple of other small caveats. Certainly from the adrenal point of view, there was about a quarter to a third of patients in both of these trials received Etomidate, which obviously shuts down the adrenal gland. Etomidate's not licensed in Australia. So immediately, the external generalization or generalizability of these two trials to Australian and New Zealand population is a little bit uncertain. We don't tend to use much Etomidate, certainly where I work. So again, not entirely clear. Now, it's a randomized trial that should balance out across the groups. I think in the States, you probably use quite a bit more Etomidate, so probably more directly relevant to your practice over there. There were a couple of other issues with the Anand trial. They released an adjusted analysis, which wasn't really explained as to why they had to adjust the analysis. I think the groups were relatively similar at baseline. So there were a couple of things that the Corticus people picked up on, and they went with their subsequent study. They left out the fludrocortisone that was in the Anand trial. They thought 200 milligrams of hydrocortisone would have enough mineralocorticoid activity, and you didn't need the additional fludrocortisone on top of that. So there were certainly significant differences between the two trials, and the biggest one was probably the finding about relative adrenal insufficiency. So whereas the Anand paper managed to, or the Anand trial managed to split their cohort quite nicely into those that did and didn't respond to the ACTH stimulation test, in the subsequent paper, Corticus, they didn't really find any great effect from doing that stimulation test. There was just no difference amongst people. And there's, I suppose we could spend an age talking about the relevance of an ACTH stimulation test are not, and there's new guidelines out, new European guidelines out about relative adrenal insufficiency as well. So the Anand paper, they used it, they found it useful. The subsequent Corticus study, they used it, they didn't find it useful. And what's interesting is the adrenal paper, or the adrenal trial, they haven't used it. There's no ACTH stimulation test in the adrenal trial.
Okay, you have like four things in there that I want to discuss individually. So let's break them down and talk about them one by one if you're game.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I don't bother with the ACTH stimulation test at this point. Rob, are you even sending a baseline cortisol before you start the steroids?
No, we don't look at it at all. The reading around it I've done, and certainly Balavendikash, as you would expect, has written quite a bit around this. It just doesn't seem to be hugely helpful, even within an individual. And obviously, ACTH undergoes pulsatile release, but even that seems to be blunted when someone is really sick. And despite it being blunted, the values are still all over the place for any one individual. So it's interesting, the European guideline, which has just come out, looking at relative adrenal insufficiency, it doesn't seem to comment that I can find in it whether you should or shouldn't do an ACTH stimulation test. It compares the different types of test, but it says that no one test is particularly accurate, but it doesn't address the question that you want, which is you should or shouldn't do the test. Have you looked at those, Scott?
Yeah, I did, and I think I'm in the same place you are. I'm kind of confused. And I think at this stage of the game, no one, unless you truly suspect a true adrenal issue as opposed to a one caused by their septic shock state, I don't think anyone's doing the stim test. My question was, is it worth just sending just a cortisol just to get an idea of, wow, that's weird. Their cortisol is actually super low, lower than you'd expect in this setting, and maybe they had a baseline issue with their adrenal system prior to any of this. Maybe this is the manifestation of an exacerbation of an underlying adrenal insufficiency that the sepsis is just bringing out. But at this stage, you're not going down that road.
No, I'm not sure I'd know what to do with it.
Yeah,
it comes back and it's super low. Do I treat? Do I not? I'll still probably go in the clinical picture that I'm faced with rather than whatever that number is. Because maybe if you do the test in an hour's time or 2 hours' time, you'll get quite a different number. So my problem is I just wouldn't know at this point in time what to do with that test result if I got it back.
Indeed. Now, some people are giving infusion of hydrocortisone, and that is currently what the Surviving Sepsis Campaign recommends as well, and you'll tell me if the European guidelines are recommending that. I am still, just for ease, just don't want to steal the port. I don't want to have yet another pump hanging in their super acute resuscitative phase. I'm just giving the hydrocortisone 100 milligrams.
So we would give typically 200 milligrams a day, so 50 milligrams four times a day, which again is fairly standard. Now, as I mentioned, the adrenal trial, they're going to investigate it as an infusion. So it's 200 milligrams, constant infusion over 24 hours. And I've been trying to find exactly why they've chosen that. They don't mention the rationale for that in the protocol that they've published in Critical Care and Resuscitation. It was published 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago now. There's a suggestion in one of the many meta-analyses that have been done in this area that patients who are treated with a infusion do better than those that receive pulsatile treatment. It's not clear to me. We're still going with pulsatile dosing. The guys who are doing the adrenal trial will have looked at this in great detail. And if they're doing it as a continuous infusion, I am sure there's a lot of thought behind that.
Okay, let's talk about the etomidate issue, which I think Cortic has addressed nicely, and there were sub-analyses of this specific issue. It did not seem like etomidate made any difference, and it certainly did not seem like supplementing steroids to patients who received etomidate made any difference when they looked at the Corticus data in addition to some other small studies. Is this even an issue anymore that we should deal with? There was a time where if the ED had given etomidate, I would just empirically, if the patient required vasopressors, give hydrocortisone, and I'm not sure if that's really the state anymore. If the norepi dose is low, I don't bother supplementing even if they got etomidate. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, like I say, it's just not used where I work. So it's not an issue for me. I have alternatives. I don't need to roll that dice.
We all have alternatives. There's really no reason to be using etomidate in these patients. If you want my judgment call, use ketamine on all your sepsis and septic shock intubations. That's just my opinion, but I think there's some pretty good data to back it up. Okay, so there you go. Quick wee, steroids and septic shock, Rob McSweeney, Critical Care Reviews Conference, amazing stuff. Real podcast out later this week. Now, you should read more about the steroids and septic shock issue because this is the way you could actually anticipate and understand the adrenal results. So where you want to go is first, the bottom line has done an astoundingly good piece on the entire history of this clinical situation. And so that is linked in the show notes. And then Josh Farkas did a wonderful post on this on PulmCrit, and he'd probably disagree with my whole thought that Anon represented sick patients and Corticus did not represent sick patients, but I'm still going to take it that way. And so you read that, and then you either tune into the live stream, which in most of North America would require getting up really, really early. You're probably not going to do that. But what you can do is then watch the edited version of the live stream coming out that same day. So there's really no reason to wake up at 4 a.m. unless you're like such a diligent person that you just can't accept anyone knowing before you. Like you can't accept waiting until it actually comes out later that same day. And both of those will be found at mcrit.org/adrenal, which will link to wherever Rob sets those up. And then there will be a simultaneous with the announcements or near simultaneous we with the lead author of the trial. So good stuff coming. We'll have an answer maybe. Talk to you soon. Scott Weingart, MCRIT Podcast, saying bye-bye.